Welcome to Hubbub, the People's Podcast, where we engage our citizens and investors with the activities of the Planning and Code Administration and encourage everyone to contribute to Hagerstown's growth.
Well, welcome to the January edition of the Hubbub Podcast. My name is Sean Brown, co-hosting with the co-host with the most, Donnie Harcum. How are you?
I'm good. It's a brand new year. We're in 2021, first podcast of the year, and I'm refreshed and ready to go. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Episode 19.
Wild.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still on. We haven't been fired yet, so I guess we're doing something right.
I know. We say that every time, and here we are. So you're welcome.
Yep. But it is nice to be here and to be able to be of help to our community. That's why we have developed this podcast, is to keep our community informed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And today's podcast is especially timely, especially with the events that are going on in the world around us. As we're doing this podcast, recently there was an event in D.C. and around the Capitol. And so we see things like this going on more and more prevalent, all types of disasters, even civil unrest. And so really an appropriate topic for us to talk about this month. I remember thinking before I know what I know now, just like all of us, you know, when we learn things, then our perspective changes. And with this topic today of how do we respond to disasters, civil unrest, or just things that are out of the norm, it takes a lot of organization. And I remember when I would sit in the chair and watch things on TV, and it seemed like it took forever to respond, or maybe it seemed like things were disorganized, and I would think, well, what's going on? What's happening? And it just kind of seemed to take so long. What was your perspective?
No, I agree with you. You know, everybody has their own opinion on what they think are the correct steps to take and how fast they would do it in that instance. But you really don't know until you're in that situation. I personally have not been in that situation in an official capacity yet. So, and you really don't know because all these situations are very different. But I agree with you 100%. It's you don't know everything until you go through a training like we did and learn more about these systems, and you know, until you're actually doing it yourself.
Yeah, you know, and those are good questions. And we realize people in our community, they have a lot of questions when things happen, no matter what the event is. It could even be something as simple as a snowstorm event. That takes a lot of organization. There are a lot of things that are done behind the scenes, and people may not know that. So that's kind of one of the things that our podcast is going to do today. As always, you know, we want to inform the public, the people in our community, of what goes on really behind the scenes. I know personally, I've been in a number of situations where I saw it firsthand. The big thing that comes to mind with me is when I lived down in Virginia in an area in 2008, a tornado came through, and it was an EF3 tornado. Destroyed several homes. And I tell you what, I mean, the disaster was immense. And to see all of these things going on, all these different gears and things going on, and some behind the scenes, it was pretty amazing. It was pretty amazing. And, you know, you can only be as organized because in that case, it was caught off guard. Who knows when a tornado is going to hit? And so here you're caught in this situation, and you hope you've planned. And so, it was really, really interesting. So again, you know, when we think about these types of events, it takes a lot of organization, it takes a lot of resources, it takes a lot of money and coordination to accomplish that. So, you know, that'll be something we'll be able to talk about today.
Absolutely. And, you know, we got to ask the question, you know, how do these types of responses to natural disasters, how are they organized? You know, especially right now, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. How do these efforts become organized? You know, well, most communities use an incident command system, or an ICS. The system is a standardized hierarchical structure that allows for a cooperative response by multiple agencies, both within and outside the government. The ICS model comes from NIMS, which is the National Incident Management System. NIMS guides all levels of government, non-governmental agencies, and the private sector to work together to prevent, protect against, mitigate, and respond to, and recover from incidents. The ICS standardizes this structure, and the Incident Action Plan is the formal document for incident goals, operational objectives, and the response strategy defined by the incident command during the planning. So as Sean mentioned, a lot of this is, it comes down to planning. You know, hopefully you'll never have to use it, but more than likely, you know, there's a lot of it's out of our control as to when this comes into our lives. So having the best plan is the best option.
Yeah, and I didn't even know about this incident command system before we took this course. This past July, you and I were able to attend this week-long course. Right. That delayed our podcast getting released a little bit because that week we were in this class, this incident command system. We're not going to get into a tremendous detail, but to highlight the fact that this setup, this infrastructure, or this program is really key to managing events when they happen. Most of the time, and for the most part, it is attended by people who are first responders, fire and medics and so forth. But we were privileged to attend it as well because naturally, when we think about it, when events happen, maybe a natural disaster or, say, for example, the civil unrest that was just happened recently, look at all the damage to property that happened. And that's where our department would come in to, you know, assess the situation. Worst case scenario, like for example, with the tornado that I experienced, we had to go in as a department and assess each structure. What extent was the damage? Was it completely destroyed? And in many cases, it was. So the code department really plays a real critical role to this incident command system. We are very much part of the planning process with this situation, and we're going to go into a little bit more detail about that a little bit later.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because, like you said, in our class, it was, I think we're the only two code people in the class, and we were with a bunch of firefighters, which was really cool, just to work with another department and see how we all operate. So before we get into any of the more nitty-gritty details, I'll give a little bit of a history of the ICS. So this all started back in the 1970s after a series of catastrophic fires in California. Property damage ran into the millions and many more people died or were injured. It was learned from these incidents that failures likely resulted from inadequate management. And for that reason, the incident command system was born. The primary role of the ICS is to establish planning and management functions for responding partners to work in a coordinated and systematic approach. Some of these functions include using common terminology. You know, you can start, you can talk about when people start using slang or acronyms, and people may not know what exactly you're talking about. When I was in the military, and I know the same goes for police and fire departments, there's usually an acronym for everything, and when you mix outside agencies into the conversation, they'll sometimes look at you like you have two heads. Sometimes the way I look at Sean, but that's beside the point. Also, you want to make sure you're integrating communication media. You want to make sure you're creating a unified command structure and coordinating resource management and allocation, and again, planning. So those are some approaches that you want to take when setting up the ICS.
Yeah, I appreciated that point to what you were saying, not about looking at me, but all different departments in different areas, they use different. Well, if you try to bring all those together, which it's a reality, you have to be able to communicate the same on that level. So that was pretty interesting, you know. But, you know, when I was thinking about this, we're all familiar with this concept because most families have some type of plan to plan for an emergency. You know, as a family, you have a plan if a fire were to break out in your home. You're kind of structured the same. You've got a person who kind of, a commander, you know, he's kind of managing, and if a fire breaks out, he knows what's going to happen. Where's the family going to go? You know, how are they going to be able to communicate? You know, there's a planning aspect to that. There may be even some financial cost to that, right? Right. So, you know, even as families, even though we may not be involved in this type of system on a small scale, it's really the same thing. And so when we think about fire departments, think about that. Every time there's a fire, that's an incident. And so they apply the same principle with every fire. So when we think about, there's basically, as we learn, there are five aspects to basically forming this this ability to respond: command, operations, planning, logistics, and finance. So maybe just going through these briefly. Command, basically, they're the ones that are responsible for developing, directing, and maintaining communication. You've got that person giving the direction, and then he's getting feedback, and it's just a continual process of direction and feedback. Then you have operations, and basically it's just that. Actually overseeing the tactical operation, making sure that the right resources are getting to the right place at the right time, and that's important. Then there's the planning part of it. If you've got an event that's going to happen, unless you have a plan, how are you going to know what to do? So that planning is real, real important. Being able to have as much information as possible, and then being able to know how to respond. And then there's logistics. So, you've got personnel, you've got equipment, and then other support. There are a lot of keys to that, and being able to know where those resources are, so that you know where to go to get them where they need to be. And then finance as well. There is always a cost. If this type of event happens, what can we project it's going to cost? And being able to have those funds set aside, at least an estimate. You never really know, but you have to be able to give a good guesstimate. And that's really what the ICS system does. It basically puts all this information together to be able to plan for an event. So that's just kind of basically in principle what this organization does.
Right. So that's some really good points there. I want to go back to the command part of that. I really look at that as the foundation of it all. It goes back to my earlier point. You want to make sure that you're creating that unified command structure just so everybody knows, who's reporting to who, because each situation, a different department within a government could be the, commander in that incident. It just depends on the incident itself. So those are really good points. And during these courses that we went through, they have students plan for disaster events, such as you mentioned earlier, a snowstorm making its way to the community. The snow is expected to be heavy at times. There's an issue with the water supply system in the community, and this event will disrupt the water to the community. And these are types of situations where having different agencies involved pays off. Having the knowledge of different departments within a government allows more outside-the-box thinking and will give you a more wide range of solutions that one person may not think of. And a lot of times with these situations, more problems will keep popping up along the way, not only in exercise scenarios such as these, but also in real life. One disaster can lead to another, and you really need to be prepared for it. Winter storm scenarios are more common type of situation with the incident command system. This is why we chose this topic for our January podcast when we were planning our topic, because just a few weeks ago we had a significant snowstorm, and if you stick around to the end of the episode, we'll talk about during our weird news story about all the snow that New York got, and is an interesting one. So I can guarantee they had some type of incident command system in place up north. So,
yeah, and the fact is that we didn't explore. We kind of really just scratched the surface.
Oh yeah.
It really helps people who really don't understand what's going on why it can take a little bit of time, because you can just, to the best of your ability, imagine the amount of time and energy to get this thing up and running. You've got it organized, but now you've got to implement it, and that doesn't turn on a dime. Yeah, so it takes time to get these things going because there are just so many resources. I did enjoy this course. It was really eye-opener. It would be good if everybody could get part of this, because it really was an eye-opener with what happens and what's required. And our instructor in this case was Will Ball. And he was really good with providing us a lot of good information, as you were referring to. In a class, we broke off into groups, And we actually did exercises planning for an event. So, you know, he would present a scenario, an event that was going to happen. Now, what are you all going to do? And so we had these worksheets that we had to go through and be able to basically determine what resources, just a host of things that we would need to think about so that we could plan for an event, even something like a snowstorm or even a pandemic. And so he provided a scenario. In one case, it was with flooding in a city. And in fact, he was he's had firsthand experience with response in this incident command system situation in various scenarios and other disasters. And so it was really helpful to help us to see that, you know, when these things happen, when these events occur, you know, we'll know how to respond. So, you know, think about the pandemic right now. So now we've got a situation, as we know, where the vaccines are getting out. And perhaps we've even seen on the news some of the steps that they're taking to get the vaccines out. We hear about the challenges too, right? So you think about, they had a plan and they had a goal to get the vaccine out to people. But what we've also been hearing on the news is the challenges, the things that were unexpected. Yeah, we didn't think about that. And that's understandable. That's going to happen. You know, all of us, we can have the best plans, but how often something comes up that we didn't foresee? So, you know, you got to be able to try to prepare for those. So, you know, we can see firsthand just exactly what we're talking about, something that we, you know, have to be able to plan for. And then sometimes you have to modify. You had a plan in place to be able to respond. Now the situation has changed, and now you have to be able to modify your plan and make adjustments. Yeah.
Really good point. And to go back to the vaccines, you can see how each jurisdiction is doing different things. And, you know, I'm sure all of them, most of them, had plans on how to roll this out and how each one is doing it different. It's interesting to see the way people think. And this is a learning opportunity for all of us. That's for sure. You know, these scenarios we're put through are really helping you think broadly and to make sure that you're thinking about everything you might need to address an incident. When a real incident occurs, we can think through different situations because we trained for it. Just like in the last example, the incident command staff would have to know what resources were available to them to safely have the vaccines delivered while maintaining an adequate supply of plow trucks and other equipment to foster safe travel on the roads. And you gotta think of it like practice. The more you practice, the better you'll be at it when you are called up to play. You just gotta keep training. You know, always gotta keep thinking outside the box of different options available to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, going back to this course that we took, you know, we explored, for example, a winter storm scenario. And some of the things that, you know, and these are things that we even implement within our department, even though they're on a small scale. You know, we have leadership, we have objectives for our department, we have responsibilities. And this course really highlighted, at least for me, and I think for you, Donnie, as well, is that, you know, planning is real, real important. You know, when you have an event, for example, one of the worksheets that we talked about is, you know, basically creating a site plan. So, you know, if you've got all these resources and you're going to use them, where are you going to put them, right? So oftentimes we see on the news in an event, we see the resources to work, but where do they come from? Where were they staged? How were they spread out? How many were allocated for this area? You know, we don't see all that, but we recognize that there's a lot of planning with that. And so, you know, our department, again, is very much part of that. Again, when an event happens, we have to go out, we have to assess the condition of the structure. Is it structurally sound? If it's not structurally sound, then we may have to determine, and sometimes it can be a difficult call, that this structure is no longer habitable. It's in danger of collapse. And so then now we've got to tap into resources now to find place for these people who are now cannot no longer live in their home. Now they have to relocate and somewhere else. Maybe buildings in an entire neighborhood are damaged. Again, that happens. Again, with the tornado, I saw most parts of a whole subdivision. The people could no longer live there. Hundreds of homes. What are you going to do with all these people, right? So that comes in regionally. In that case, and this is what typically happens, and maybe we even saw this recently, you've got a local area, a small town, or even a city. Because the event is so large, the resources that they have locally can no longer handle it. Now they got to reach out regionally. And that's totally different reach there. So just a lot of things to think about. Another thing to think about, as in Hagerstown, we have a number of areas where we have historic districts. Absolutely. So now you have a home or homes that are damaged from either a storm or some type of event. Now you've got to help those homes recover because now they're historical. Now you've got the facet of the historic district commission or the planning commission. Now you've got to work with them now to restore these homes the way they should be. So again, we've just touched the surface. There are so many things that you have to take into consideration when an event happens.
Absolutely. And thanks for all that information. And I want to go back to, our instructor. And so he's part of the incident command staff right now for the pandemic that's going on in the community. And whenever we would show up early to the class, he'd just be getting on or off his teleconference for the ICS. And basically going over the numbers for the pandemic for the previous day and what the plans were for the rest of the day and the rest of the week. So that was really cool to, unfortunately, is the situation that we're in, it was neat to see it in real life, it is real, these situations do have to be planned for. So it's unfortunate, but that is the reality of life.
Yeah, and that's a good example. What he highlighted as well is that, you could have an event aside from the pandemic, and so you got to plan for that. But then now you've got to deal with this event in light of the pandemic.
Right.
So we didn't even touch the whole issue of safety. Right. It was a whole safety aspect to an event anyway. Now you have the pandemic. Now that creates another layer of safety and planning and well. So, a lot to think about.
It is. All right, so like Sean said, this is just touching the surface of incident command systems. But we hope you have a little bit better of an understanding of how it works and how our local community responders plan for incidents such as these. If you want to find out more, make sure you're following us. You can follow the Hubbub Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. You can listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast platforms. And if you want to see our smiling faces, you can find us on YouTube by searching for the Hubbub Podcast. And now, as I alluded to earlier, it's time for the weird news story of the month. All right, so the title of this one is Motorist Rescued After 10 Hours in Car Buried by Snowplow. So it sounded funny at first, but the more I read it, it was very serious. So as I mentioned earlier, a few weeks ago, New York had their big snowstorm, and a motorist ran off the side of the road, and then a snowplow came through and buried them in their car. So they were trapped. Fortunately, after a while, he was able to reach 911, and police narrowed his location down to a 3-mile stretch of road. Police believe that if the man was in there another hour, that he may not have survived, but fortunately he did. It's such a crazy story, and this story kept popping up and is weird, but we're very glad the guy was rescued. So just shows you what a kink a snowstorm can cause,
Yeah.
The mess.
Yeah. I'd hate to have been that guy.
Oh,
wow.
My.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that, Donnie.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Appreciate that. Okay, so our musical guest for our podcast today, Jeff Talton. This guy, really a talented guy, been involved in music since his teenage years, really a talented guy. Not only does he sing great music, but he is a songwriter and an excellent songwriter at that. Originally out of Boonesboro, lives in Hagerstown. I've been playing since the 1970s. He mentions how he played his first bass that he got from Montgomery Ward. So interesting. But he's been playing since a teenager. His first band that he played in was Spike. But he's been part of several bands. Even now, he's part of a number of bands, but he really enjoys performing as a solo acoustic artist because he's a solo act primarily. He's been playing in a few venues here and there, so look him up. Check out his website. Of course, you can find him on social media, Facebook, Jeff Talton, J-E-F-F-T-A-U-L-T-O-N, jefftalton.com, and YouTube. You can find his music anywhere. He plays a variety of music, and again, a great musician and collaborates with a lot of different people. So take a listen to Jeff Talton. You'll really enjoy his sound. And so we thank you for listening to this edition of the Hubba Podcast.
A railroad that runs down the way. My pappy just bowed his old head. Said he'd be better off dead. Well, I wonder if Hagerstown heard. They say bad news will travel by bird. Augusta is next on the line. Let's go down and steal the big sign. Now the Weaverton station is gone. Her four walls they went down before dawn. Now mama she's singing a song. So sad.